What does that happy music mean? It means that it is time for Pop Culture Happy Hour. We are back, and you are back. And I'm also sitting back in the host seat after...
after last week's disastrous experiment.
You've deposed the hated previous host.
A long
national nightmare is finally over.
I've decided to, I spent the summer hosting with a bunch of high school students. And it made me feel like I could come back on the team and retake my position.
Yeah, nothing makes you appreciate the starter like putting in the backup.
No. At any rate, as you can probably tell, it is the same lineup as always. I am here with the generally accepted Pop Culture Happy Hour crowd. And Stephen, now that you've already relinquished your seat, I will allow you to tell me who you are.
Thank you so much. I am Stephen Thompson. I'm with NPR Music.
And who's down there next to you?
I am Trey Graham. I'm the movies editor at NPR.org. And I look over Linda's shoulder on the Monkey See blog and keep her from, you know, libeling anybody as best I can.
As best you can. Except, of course, that I do occasionally libel Trey. Now, how about you over here on the other side of me? Who we got over here?
I'm Glenn Weldon. I write about comics for Monkey See, and I also write about books for the NPR website.
Glenn is a guy who occasionally turns pages.
Mm-hmm.
What's up with that?
Virtual or actual?
Yeah. What's up with that?
It's very disappointing.
All right, so first on the agenda this week is the Primetime Emmys, which were recently given out. And I think it's safe to say one of the few entertaining broadcasts that the Emmys has ever managed to produce. Now, Did anyone besides me see any of the Emmys?
I actually could not. I was driving from Chicago to D.C., because, basically, when you think about it, driving is basically sitting motionless and staring through a screen while eating Pringles.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that for 15 straight hours, as I can, then you're well-suited to sit in on a pop culture podcast.
Oh!
It's true. I will say the only downside is that you have to exercise nap suppression.
Fantastic. Anyone else? Anyone? Emmys?
Right. I watched the opening bit online. When the Emmys were on TV, when you were actually working, I was at the theater getting some culture.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't recommend that.
Well, no. And I put in the time. I did the work. I saw the Emmys.
Thank you, Glenn Weldon. God bless you.
Best cold open in memory.
Absolutely.
Seriously good.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
This is one of the parts I watched online, and man, was it fun.
Hey, guys!
Hey.
Congratulations on all the nominations. Glee is one of my favorite shows.
Thanks.
Congrats on the hosting gig.
Yeah.
Really great.
Thank you.
Yes.
See you guys there?
Yeah, we're not going. Can't afford it.
Yeah, the tickets are like $300. That's like...
It's $1,200 for it.
$1,200. You guys have to go. But there's got to be a way to come up with the money.
Oh, it's on, bitches.
The way this opening worked, Jimmy Fallon, the host of the Emmys, and sort of a favorite of mine, not up in the firmament with NPH, but somebody that we at Monkey See have been known to appreciate. Jimmy Fallon was the host, and in this little sketch, runs into some of the cast members from Glee, and it all opens up into this massive Born to Run sing-along show choir number.
One, two, three!
Accompanied by Tina Fey, John Hamm, Joel McHale.
Noted Glee fan Joel McHale.
Exactly. Betty White, you know, a little bit of everybody, even Kate Gosselin.
Right.
And I know that it will please you, Stephen, to know that Kate Gosselin was able to have yet another chuckle at the expense of her Dancing with the Stars experience.
I love Kate Gosselin's Dancing with the Stars appearances. I could... It recalled watching her dance with Tony Dovolani on Dancing with the Stars was not unlike the impeccable choreography of Weekend at Bernie's. I remember tweeting at the time that she moves with the lithe grace of a piece of luggage.
There you go.
I have to say that, you know, the learning that Kate Gosselin is capable of self-parody, even just the little bit of self-parody that was in this Emmys Open, was it gives me hope that
yes.
Western civilization is not entirely in decline.
Well, it's a tiny shred of likability, which she really could use.
I will point out that her performance did continue, I would say, to live up to the Dancing with the Stars standard that she had set, since one of our live bloggers, my pal Joe Reed, pointed out that she was not able to credibly hop up and down.
Yeah, that is sad.
So
the really smart thing about it, though, is it combined the sort of meta winking humor of the one cold open that Conan did a few years back, where he kind of gets stuck in all the different television shows and ends up in the Lost Island and crashes at the office ceiling. You combine that with the propulsive energy of a big splashy production number, and
again
and
with the Charles Nelson Reilly
busted out in the first 5 minutes.
Leitmotif. Yeah. And you get something that really propels you through the show about halfway through, when we start talking about directing variety.
Oh, man. Mm. They have separated out the Emmys these days into, first they do all the comedy, then they do all the drama. No, they did all the comedy, then they did all the reality. Mm-hmm. Then they did all the drama, then they did all the variety, then they did all the miniseries, then they brought back best comedy series and best drama series, which they had saved till the end. And this is fun in the sense that you start to get to hear some things that you care about a little bit earlier, because it means that they don't save all the big ones in all the different genres until the very end. But the problem is, late in the game, you get to this long, long march of miniseries and movies awards, which just go on forever. And Al Pacino filibusters. And it's just...
And these are the awards you really don't care about unless you are Al Pacino or, say, Betty Buckley.
Which, fortunately,
I actually am.
You
know. Oh, yes.
Well, you don't really care about them, but you also... There are so few of these things being made anymore. And it's true, you know, HBO still makes a lot of movies. Showtime still makes a lot of movies. But there aren't the number of movies being made, and especially miniseries being
made. Well, miniseries, don't the awards basically come down to, it's either going to be this or this?
Yeah. There were
Which
two.
Which of the two will,
there were,
will
There
win?
Were two last night. There was The Pacific on HBO, and there was Return to Cranford.
I can't imagine being more emotionally engaged in which of those two miniseries.
Well, right till the end, it was going to be Return to Cranapple, and I thought that's definitely not what it was, and it became at the end Return to Cranford, which is PBS. And so there were two, and when you see anything that involves two things, that's no longer a genre.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the movies are not quite as the situation isn't quite as dire, but it's still true.
Yeah, but there's some weird category shuffling going on there. I mean, in what universe is Nurse Jackie a comedy and True Blood a drama?
The fact that Edie Falco won for lead actress in a comedy for Nurse Jackie definitely attracted some attention. She said herself when she gave her acceptance speech, "I'm not funny, I'm not a comedian, I don't understand why this happened," which is all meant to be very sort of self-deprecatingly amusing, except that for a lot of people that absolutely had no business being nominated as a comedy. It does wind up sort of poaching a place from Amy Poehler or Tina Fey or somebody like that who's actually on a comedy.
Well, they clearly need a dramedy category. Could be like in the old days, it could be like Slap Maxwell, MD versus Hooperman.
I'll see.
If I may take the Glenn Weldon Prize for most obscure reference.
I was going to say, can we just talk about the clutter in the corners of your brain?
Yeah, you know, I
you think about all the things I don't know.
Oh, and that, a John Ritter reference. Nicely done.
Hooperman, I remember. I slapped Maxwell.
That was with Dabney Coleman.
Yeah.
You are on your own there, buddy.
High five. Up top.
No. Yeah, this is where I leave you hanging.
Not from notes, by the way.
That's fantastic. And I will say there are more dramedies than there are miniseries.
Well, exactly.
So if miniseries
they could actually
can have their own category, then theoretically you could have dramedies. But, you know, overall the Emmys did have some, I would say, satisfying winners. Jim Parsons for Big Bang Theory, which a lot of people like,
that seemed to set Twitter ablaze. Mm.
Yeah, Jim Parsons. Breaking Bad won both of the drama acting awards on the men's side.
Even though I've never seen it.
And I think those were considered welcome. Keir Sedgwick, who's been nominated for The Closer over and over and over and over and never won, and I think everybody thought, forget it. One,
right. But I got to agree with Joe Reed on the live blog. Who he was expecting blubbering. He wanted blubbering from her. I didn't want blubbering from her, but I wanted something besides, here, Tina Fey, hold my Emmy while I read this list. Come on.
I don't want a list. Now, I haven't seen the speech. I don't want a list. But at the same time, the Halle Berry emotathons just make just nauseate me.
No, absolutely.
You want you didn't do. You're an actor.
This was very big cool and patrician, though. Maybe a little too much.
It was. She actually put on a little pair of glasses and read her speech, and it was
Speech was entirely about digital piracy.
So let me summarize here, as I sometimes do. Mm-hmm. We're sitting here criticizing her for being collected and professional.
Well,
yes.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
All right.
Thank you for seeing my point.
Yes. That's exactly what's happening. It's terribly, terribly unfair. But, good winners. Modern Family won for Best Comedy. Good show. Mad Men won for Best Drama. Good show. Very little to argue with in any of the winners, really, which is very unusual since the Emmys have a long documented tendency to reward the same people over and over again, and things I don't like. But it's partly just the repetitive nature of the way they give them out. Things,
right?
Like
but
that.
I mean, Lost fans were complaining. But I mean, has that ever happened? The sort of valedictory sort of salute, because Lost won in 2005, and that's when things win in the kind of blush of the new.
I'm not sure how much
in
that's
the blush
actually,
of the new.
Hey.
I'm not sure how often that actually.
I just want to point out for a moment, not to derail the conversation, but Glenn actually talks like this.
Okay.
This is true.
Yeah, but not anymore.
No.
Now you've killed it.
Now Stephen killed
it.
Don't
talk good no more.
No, Glenn's going to be like, it was nice.
I saw the show.
I liked it.
I liked the show. Aquaman is sexy.
Okay.
You leave Aquaman out of this.
I am leaving Aquaman out of it. I'm just
Shut
being
your
hurtful.
Mouth.
Aquaman is going to come up every week until
until we do the Aquaman special.
Until the inevitable Aquaman special.
I'm kind of mystified why it keeps coming up.
Because I love saying Aquaman.
Well, who doesn't?
Here
we come.
That's why. All you got to do is tease it out of you just a little tiny bit.
All right. So what was your point back then?
I think the point that I was making was, I think Lost had a good season. I think a good final season in some ways for some people.
But does that happen? That's my question. Does the valedictory... did The Sopranos win on its final year?
I believe they did, yes. But I am not 100% certain on that one. Because I'm not a font of wisdom.
Okay.
But at any rate, so that was the Emmys. And I think they were fun. But, it's always good to have another awards show out of the way for another year.
What I noticed about that opening musical montage is that everybody... who came onto that thing was like an internet darling, a little meme, except for random CW person who I've never seen before from Vampire Diaries. Like, what was that going on there? Who is she?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I think we are not the demographic. I think she was the representative vampire. They didn't have anyone from True Blood, so I think you have to have at least one. I mean, I don't know that she actually plays a vampire. I would not know since Vampire Diaries is not on my list of favorite shows, and I do not have a season pass on my TiVo.
Okay.
And if I saw that, I would just assume she's a giant meme somewhere.
Is she? Because I just heard a chorus.
Vampire Diaries to me screams there's a big pocket of.
The CW is not my.
It's not our exact thing, but I think she probably has her people on her CW beloved show.
Well, I heard a chorus of who now?
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah, it's definitely true. She was a little bit of an outlier in that regard. But yes, they picked a lot of people who are sort of very beloved and fun to see, and the obvious Betty White and. They did round up sort of everybody. So
I'd really like to start the Betty White backlash.
Yeah,
we can do it now.
Virulent,
right?
Virulent hatred of Betty White, and also Sully, the hero pilot who landed plane safely on the Hudson River. Down with Sully.
Okay,
I want to get out in front of
you. You are out in front on the vanguard.
Linda and I have talked about this before. There are certain famous people who have a 100% approval rating, and one of them is Sully. And I just think it should be 99.99%.
So Steven is coming out as the first person to have a negative opinion.
Listen,
of Sully.
Avoid the birds in the first place. Nice job dodging birds, Sully.
Thus makes Steven Thompson the Armand White of NPR. Uh-huh. So.
Wow. Oh,
that's
Stephen Thompson, Sully hater.
My, how far we've wandered. All right, so the other big thing on the agenda this week, I believe, is we're going to do a round of something that is making you happy. right now. And I'm going to start over here with Glenn.
All right. There's a podcast called Comedy Death Ray, hosted by Scott Aukerman. You can get it at earwolf.com or on iTunes. He brings on comedians to just talk for about an hour, and often they come in character. And so what this show ends up being is long-form in-character improv, and I think it's some of the best around. It's improv, so it's hit or miss, but it hits more often than it misses. So there's a lot of episodes right now. You want to look for episodes that feature the actor-comedian Seth Morris as a character called Bob Duca, who is Scott's ex-stepfather. But you also want to look especially for any episodes featuring Paul F. Tompkins, Paul F. Tompkins, either as himself or he's often coming on in character. He has come on several times as Ice-T, doing an uncanny Ice-T impersonation. He has come on as Andrew Lloyd Webber, doing a very canny Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Please.
Because it sounds nothing like him, but it's still very funny. Recently, he's been coming on as the cake boss, but not the cake boss you or I know, but a sort of deranged, absurdist version of the cake boss. The first time he was introduced, we find out that the cake boss has recently been bitten by a cake bug, which, as is its wont, bestows upon its victim the power of second sight, so he could read the future. Recently, a couple weeks ago, he came on as the cake boss again, but this time he reveals that he has also been bitten by a cake scarab, which bestows upon its victim the power to commune with the dead, both the actual dead and the fictional dead. And I think that sets up this clip rather nicely.
So let's try to contact both of them.
Okay, yeah. McLean Stevenson and Colonel Henry Blake, the character.
Yeah. Let's see whoever you can get a hold of. Let's
okay,
talk to
I'll see. Let me go into my trance.
Should we go quiet?
What do you need from us?
Do you need some?
Oh, he's already in.
Attention, everybody in the afterlife. I'm looking to talk to either Colonel Henry Blake, the character from MASH, either the television show, the movie, or the book. Also, in addition to, if someone could direct me to McLean Stevenson, the actor, he was in MASH and Hello Larry and he made numerous MASH game appearances.
All right, the fact that the cake boss enters his trance by saying cake boss is perhaps my favorite thing ever. So you get the sense. This is long. It's long form improv. It's just. It's like what a morning zoo would be if they were mature and absurdist.
I also recommend, in a somewhat similar vein, the best show from WFMU with Tom Sharpling. Which is sort of the similar kind of, he's generally sort of the straight man who's trying to keep the show going, and then John Worster will call in various guises. That show is very, very, very funny.
Yes. I have to say, he does not sound that much like the cake boss.
No.
That was my.
It's sort of like a Leo Gorcy, like the Bowery Boys, sort of. I think I might have out-obscured you just
then.
I was going
to say, you might have just out-obscured me.
So that's making you happy this week,
sir.
Very
happy.
And I suspect it will make me happy, too. Because I think my visit with the cake boss and McLean Stevenson is now inevitable. All right, how about you, Trey Graham? What's making you happy?
Oh, this little movie called White Wedding. It's opening this week in New York, but it's going to get wider play in a few other cities between now and Thanksgiving time, probably. It's got a website at whiteweddingmovie.com. If you don't see your city, this is not the sort of thing I usually do, but call your local art house and ask for it. Seriously, I promise you won't be sorry. It's a road trip movie. It's a buddy flick. It's a romantic comedy. It's a comedy of errors set in South Africa. Dude has to drive to Cape Town from, I think it's from Durban, but I forget exactly where it starts. There's a missed bus connection. There's a best man who gets way too drunk at the bachelor party and sort of loses track of where they're supposed to be. There's a township mama, a traffic accident, a hitchhiking English tourist, a nice little side trip, dicey little side trip through a little town that, if this were an American movie starring, say, Ned Beatty and Burt Reynolds, there would be banjos. Also, there is a goat.
Good.
As there must be.
Yes. That's key.
I'm assuming that in Glenn's, the goat was silent.
But yes. I wasn't on board until the goat.
There is just so much joy in this movie. It's about some serious things, but it's this really joyful comedy, which to me captures so much of what's wonderful about the South African spirit. I should disclose fully, this is a country that has a big big, big place in my heart. I lived next door in Zimbabwe for a little while, and then when we got kicked out of Zimbabwe, I lived in South Africa briefly. This movie captures so much of the generous South African spirit that made the peaceful resolution to their political situation possible that it just made me so tremendously happy, not least because about midway through the movie, a song from Brenda Fassie pops up on the soundtrack. She was this wonderful South African pop star. They called her the Madonna of the townships. And because she was loud and flashy and transgressive and bisexual and crazy. And when I heard Buli Ndlela, one of her giant pop hits, sort of begin to creep in the background of this movie, my heart just expanded in this big, big way. I was so happy watching this movie, and I think you will be too. Bob Mandela will have a review this week on NPR.
Well, it's funny that you should mention it, because my thing that's making me happy is Piranha 3D.
Right.
This is what it's like with these people. Somebody's heart is expanding and somebody else is thinking about, what if your foot got chewed off by a fish? Because that's how we are around here.
I don't really think that foot is the most important body part in Piranha 3D.
Yeah, but I'm trying to make sure that it's appropriate for our youngest listeners, those who have come here from Yo Gabba Gabba to over to Pop Culture Happy Hour, who want to hear about only the eating of feet.
Right.
But they've just been exposed to some culture. Trey has raised them up.
You know, it's interesting, Trey, if I may digress briefly based on what Trey was saying. I know. if I may.
On this highly disciplined podcast?
If I may go off of our brutally tight agenda. You know, when I was watching the opening number of the Emmys and Jimmy Fallon, and this is part of what I like about Jimmy Fallon, part of what I like about Glee, is that I do feel, and I felt when they were doing this part of the opening where they were just jumping and fist pumping, and I thought, I think there's a little bit of kind of a comeback for it being okay to be happy and to be having fun, and I think that's part of what Glee, the reaction to Glee, is about. And that's why, and I've made this point before, so I will try not to go on about it at length, but this is why, to me, Jimmy, everything that was bad about Jimmy Fallon as a person to be on Saturday Night Live has made him kind of a delightful person to host a show. Because his whole problem when he was on SNL was that he can't really be in a sketch and be completely in a character because he's so delighted all the time and he's having such a good time. It's not complete lack of discipline that would make him break in the middle of sketches.
It's not Adam Sandler laughing at his own joke. Right.
It's not just that. It's with Jimmy Fallon, he just bubbles over with he's having such a great time and he loves what he's doing and he's terrible at not just broadcasting that he's so excited and having such an awesome time. And I think when you're hosting a talk show,
that's the perfect.
Or when you're hosting the Emmys, that's exactly what you want from the person. Mm-hmm. And so I think he has this kind of contagious, happy energy that sort of fits with like the whole Glee thing of like really high energy. You know, when you talk about joy and you talk about things that sort of, you know, I'm not suggesting the opening number to the Emmys is as good as this movie that you're talking about, but I do feel like there's a little bit of a recovery from this super, super arch.
It's the archness and
cringe,
the hipsterness that these things don't fear.
Like cringe comedy. I mean, there's been this stretch of comedies on television anyway where, and I think to some degree in movies as well, where so much of the humor is about awkward pauses and painful this and sort of the way that The Office is and the way that, to a lesser, I mean, 30 Rock is much sillier, but it still has some of those, that horrible cringing.
Right.
And maybe even going back to Seinfeld, you know, absolutely, kind of getting into these really cringy comedy. I almost feel like now there's getting to be a little bit more comfort with just, it's okay to just have things be funny and upbeat and everything doesn't always have to be ironic.
Yep.
And there's really nothing ironic about Jimmy Fallon, ever.
Right.
Jimmy Fallon is the least ironic person maybe on television. And so I think when you get him up there with those Glee kids, you know, and you know, John Hamm and all these people, and they're just excited because they're having fun, and it's people who are capable of kind of being like, I'm just going to go out there and dance. And Joel McHale, who's maybe one of the most ironic people on television, makes a really funny spectacle in this because you could tell he's kind of like getting into it.
He's having a good time.
Having a good time, and it's like, I'm happy about this sort of boomlet in things that have, that wear all of their happiness on their sleeve, I guess.
Right, that don't put happy in a frame.
Right, exactly. I think that's a very positive development.
I disagree. I hate joy.
Are you against happiness, Steven?
Boo to joy.
All right, well,
Betty White,
I was...
Sully, and joy.
That's right, that's right. I am
pretty much the troika.
I'm the contrary.
Well, you know, Steven has been known to be one of the few people to ever come out against the cherry blossoms.
It's true. I do rail against the cherry blossom festival. The cherry blossoms are overrated.
All right. Well, in lieu of asking you what's making you happy this week, Steven, because apparently nothing, I will say, what were you going to claim was making you happy before you realized that you're against being happy?
I think it's a natural segue to say that I actually didn't come up with something that's making me happy. I'm requesting some assistance, and before I request said assistance, I'm going to talk for a while.
Oh, so dear.
Give me a moment. Lend me your ears.
or alternatively, go now and fix yourself a drink.
Yeah. If the three of you would like to leave for a moment while I say what I'm about to say. Okay. So I was in Chicago over the weekend. And being in Chicago, I had an opportunity to have breakfast with some of my dearest friends with the AV Club, which is the entertainment section of The Onion, which I... used to edit, because I'm a pretty big deal.
You know, it's awesome when even our esteemed producer Mike Katziff is closing his eyes and shaking his head. It's like you've redlined, but not in the usual way. Go ahead.
So the people who run the AV Club today are still some of my dearest friends. They continue to tolerate me because I hired them. Mm-hmm. And so
to be your friends? Or
Here's $5. Get yourself something nice.
I'm sorry. I'm totally going to stop heckling you.
No. Please do.
They continue to tolerate you because
he does it to others. Go ahead.
They continue to tolerate you because you had the good sense to leave and inflict yourself on us.
That's right. Get a job somewhere else.
I was just wondering whether they had the same deal that I have. But.
So anyway, so we're having breakfast with Keith Phipps, Tasha Robinson, and Nathan Rabin. And Nathan attended the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Awesome.
Oh.
I should answer the question, the natural question, what is a Juggalo? Juggalos are hardcore fans of the group Insane Clown Posse. And being a fan of Insane Clown Posse entails sort of the wearing of evil clown makeup and the glorification of Faygo soda, and there's a whole subculture. Mike, could you hit a little Insane Clown Posse for us?
Oh my God.
Pretty much exactly what I expected.
Yeah, it's plenty. We're having breakfast, and we're having this conversation about the Juggalos, and I realize that I'm completely conversant in this topic. So he's talking about Twisted, and I'd be like, oh, Twisted was there. Jamie Madrox and the Monoxide Child? What about Blaze Ya Dead Homie? You know, so I actually know the artist that he's talking about. And then the topic turned to books. And I was completely lost. I had absolutely no idea what they were talking about. I was like, I know there's a Jonathan Franzen, and I know that, like, Mockingjay is a thing. Mm-hmm. So I sort of thought it was sad that I knew as much as I did about the Juggalos.
So you're asking whether you should read.
So
there's probably a Juggalo book.
What I'm hearing, Thompson, is that where most people mourn their misspent youth,
right,
we have been gathered today to mourn your misspent adulthood.
I think so, but basically, and I'm trying to correct a fundamental flaw in my character. which is basically, I would like to, it wouldn't be a contest. The prize is that I paid 99 cents to download an Insane Clown Posse song. But I would like to do a project in which I read a book.
That's pretty much a project right there.
Now
are you going to let us pick it? Or
well, here's the thing. I was thinking, well, you two have glasses.
Yeah, so.
So I'm assuming that you've read books before.
That's the way that works.
And here I thought certain things I've seen you do while trying to light the barbecue were the worst ideas ever.
This is a man who once a year stages a competitive chicken eating contest.
I'm not highbrow. Don't get me wrong.
Go ahead.
All right, so anyway.
So you want to read a book.
I want to read a book.
I would suggest How to Win Friends. Possibly something by Miss Manners.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, I thought, you know what the stupidest thing about this idea is? The idea is I was going to have everybody send an email. I set up an email address.
Oh, I think they will.
So, while you're sending your computer viruses to Steve, yes. You can package in the name of a book.
If there's a book you would like me to read, recommend a book, preferably with some sort of relevance, preferably something we could discuss on the show, because mostly we talk about, you know, television and movies.
You're on your own, buddy.
Anyway, I have set up an email account, fortunately separate from my own email account, so that I can just change the password and walk away if this goes as bad as I fear it might. StephenReadsABook@gmail.com.
All right.
Stephen is spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N. So if you have any book recommendations, preferably something relevant, preferably longer than Goodnight Moon, but shorter than Green Eggs and Ham, please send your recommendation to StephenReadsABook@gmail.com. That's what's making me happy this week.
All right. Well, I would like to talk about something that's probably not going to get me punched in the face, which is what is making me happy, surprisingly, at this point, is the current season of Project Runway.
Oh.
Which, after a long period of bedragglement, seems to have zoomed back to life this season. And I think I can do this without spoiling specifics. But essentially, for one thing, they're back in New York, where they belong. Now, this is not their first season back in New York, but they sort of threw off their rhythm a couple seasons ago when they were in Los Angeles, which was a terrible idea for a variety of reasons, including lack of access to their normal judging panel, Michael Kors and Nina Garcia. Right. They also had stopped having good challenges. I remember there was one season where it felt like every challenge was like, make something in blue, make something you wear to the beach. And they were just not the kinds of challenges that inspire people to do either interesting things or sometimes very ill-conceived things. This particular season, you know, they're in New York. They've got the judges back. The judges are sort of on their game. They've got a cast where there are some unlikable people, but they're not the most really obvious kind of unlikable people. Right. They're not just trying to recreate, you know, Christian Siriano in the most objectionable way over and over again, mm-hmm. with sort of over-the-top bitchery, I guess, right. I would say. They're exploring.
It's much more restrained bitchery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they're
being
so polarized. Difficult people, but people you could still conceivably get behind.
Well, not only that, but people who have. They've also sometimes gone down the road of having people who are obnoxious and so therefore make good drama, but they're not good enough
right.
at what they do.
Not particularly gifted.
That you would believe. And that was always, you know, returning to the issue of Christian Siriano, that was always the thing with him, is that, you know, he made some great clothes in addition to being really a pain in the neck who mm-hmm. drove people nuts. So I think they've kind of gotten that balance back.
Uh-huh.
And this particular season, which I got a little bit behind on and watched a couple of episodes this week, has really been, you know, it's kind of delightful, and I'm fully on board, which I have not been with that show for quite a while.
I agree. I think you could have added the Tim Gunn smackdown that happened at the end of the last episode to any season, and it would have made it better, but just something about that. I watched it 6 times.
Yeah. It was really good.
Wow, it's really good. We've discussed this many times, but Tim, his superpower is that he's right.
Mm-hmm.
He's always right. And all you need to do is listen to him. And when he is disappointed in you, must be devastating.
It's in a way, he's kind of the opposite of Gordon Ramsay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
In that way. In that, like, when Gordon Ramsay is nice to you, it sort of has this extra power because he's usually so mean.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But when Tim Gunn is mean to you, that has, like, 20,000 times as much power as other people's meanness would be.
I think I've told this story before, but one of my friends, Tara Ariano, used to tell me that she and her sister had talked about, who would it be more miserable to have angry at you, Tim Gunn or Super Nanny? And it's difficult, if you've never watched Super Nanny, to understand why that would be a difficult choice. But in fact, it is a difficult choice. It would be devastating in either case to have either one of those people unhappy with you. And but I think in the end, I'd probably go with Tim Gunn. And Tim Gunn, again, having a good season, he's managed to become a little bit more outspoken without turning into, say, Jeff Probst on Survivor.
If we may punish Jeff Probst again.
And jump in and sort of seem like he's trying to make it about himself. He very much holds his tongue until everything is done and everything is over, and then he speaks his mind. And the interesting thing is they expanded that show from 60 to 90 minutes this year, which seemed like such a terrible idea.
Yeah, at first I found that very jarring.
It seemed like a terrible idea, and basically they have used that time to show a little bit more of some of the sections of the show that you almost never got to see any of. For example, what's going on in the back room when they're in the middle of judging people out on the runway? What is everybody else talking about?
Who does everyone else think is going to be eliminated seems to be one of the big things they've added. And
So they've managed to add some things.
They stole that from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, well, I'm sure if you're going to steal from somewhere.
Well, of course.
That's right.
They do seem to have jazzed up the challenges a little bit too. I'm always a big fan of when they're like, you have to make a dress entirely out of ham slices.
Yes.
and then you discuss, like, can you lacquer the ham?
Yes. Has there been anything involving hefty bags and safety pins?
Well, they had party supplies.
Right.
They had supplies from a party store. They've basically gotten to the point now where when Tim gives that challenge, he says, and don't just buy tablecloths.
Right.
Because if you just buy tablecloths, then you look like you're resisting the challenge.
Yeah.
And so people, you know, tried all different sorts of things.
You need to go to the ribbon section.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if the show was still 60 minutes, I doubt we would have had time for the Casanova diva meltdown, which started off with everybody calls me and ends with, and I'm getting fat. Well, you can tell it's just really an excuse to complain, and the cameras are on me, so I got a list. Let me go down the list.
Nobody ever likes anything that I do. I'm just getting yelled at all the time, plus I'm getting fat.
It was so good.
The timing
of that was so good. The editing of that moment was really
very
good.
They're doing a good job with that show this year, I think.
So would you say that this season of Project Runway is as good as this season of Top Chef is bad?
I have not found the season of Top Chef to be as bad as you have.
I think it's mostly grim.
Well, it's a little dull.
It's dull. That's what I mean. It's just.
It certainly has not grabbed my interest. Although I have to say, I'm constantly mesmerized by the fact that they go to the Whole Foods that I go to.
I know. That's my neighborhood Whole Foods.
They go to our neighborhood Whole Foods, and it's terribly, terribly exciting. Because every time I see it, I think, this is my neighborhood Whole Foods on Bravo.
It's basically like dull, dull, dull.
It is.
Dull.
It's like boring, boring Whole Foods. Yay! And then boring, boring. And then I go to Whole Foods and it just doesn't feel the same.
Why aren't there cameras on me?
There's no cameras. There's no fuzzy boom mic. I don't know. I don't think the guys at the fish counter are quite as solicitous.
Right.
It's terribly, terribly disappointing. Anyway, so that's what makes me happy this week. And that brings us to, sadly, traumatically, the close of this week's Pop Culture Happy Hour.
I think we've covered a lot of ground.
And I think it's important at the end to stress, StephenReadsABook@gmail.com. All your comments are welcome.
Yes.
And, you know, if you'd like to vent at Stephen in public, I think there's a Twitter address where
you can
do good.
That.
Thanks, Ray. Well, I'm on Twitter. At a very appropriate handle.
Yes, never more so.
I dislike Stephen, spelled STEPHEN.
And you will too. I'm at Trey Graham, which is TREY.
Trey Anthony and Graham, like the cracker.
There we go.
Exactly. Trey has his own theme song.
When did I get a theme song?
Twitter theme song. We made it up last week. Yeah, how about you, Glenn?
I'm at GH Weldon.
Okay, and you can follow the blog at NPR Monkey C and our producer, Mike Katziff, at MikeKatziff. Mike Katziff.
Look
I got
at
it
that.
Right this week, I know. I just want to say a super gigantic thank you to all of you who have written us notes. You have talked to us on Twitter. It's still a newish project, and it's always really, really encouraging. And since I don't always get an opportunity to write back to everybody individually, I just wanted to say, you know, if you've dropped us a note, we've really appreciated it. We read all of them. We send them to each other, attached with little, wow, this is so great, and this is so exciting. And
I really like this
one?
Person.
I really like this person. We should make friends with them.
We feast on the validation.
We feast on the validation, and we really do appreciate how extremely nice everybody's been. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, that too is a thing that is making us happy.
Makes me happier than, than actual happiness.
All right. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Thanks to Mike's band, Hello Come In, for the music, and we will see you guys next week.